We're about to go to Black Feminism Live, which is returning this week, which is really exciting. It's a report, and Kim is talking about, and she's speaking about the role of internalized racism within the Black community and her thoughts around that.
My name is Kim Crosby, and this is Black Feminism Live. Today, I really wanted to take some time to reflect on the ways that racism gets internalized in the Black community. I think that often we are left in positions where we're responding and we're organizing against systemic or structural racism. So the kind of racism that locks people up in prison, the kind of racism that means that people are unfairly hired or unfairly fired for positions. But I think that often we don't get to have really nuanced, careful, and loving conversations about the ways that internalized racism plays out in our communities and things we can do intentionally to do something about it. So I was really just reflecting on a lot of celebrities. Tempest Bledsoe from The Cosby Show, Lil' Kim, Michael Jackson, Sammy Sosa, Vybz Kartel, Lark Voorhees from Saved by the Bell. There are so many people, there's so many Black people in Hollywood who have succumbed to the pressure, whether or not they've experienced what we perceive as being relative success or relative visibility or even relative attractiveness, or considered to be relatively attracted given the context of the work that they were doing, that even these people who have achieved this level of fame are still affected, and it comes out in the ways that they have bleached their skin or engaged in really intense plastic surgery. And I want to say no shade for people who engage in plastic surgery or who change their appearance, but I do think that there is an important conversation to be had about what motivates people to change their appearance and how in all of these cases it has been about de-racializing, so making these people's features more quote-unquote neutral, which really ends up meaning white or European. And for me in Canada, I think about how the very last, recently when we were updating the money, there was a proposed woman on one of our bills that would look Asian. And, you know, the response was that that person was not meant to look like anyone, so they're not trying to make them look like any particular racial group. So they really wanted to make them look neutral, and neutral, again, in this case, meant white, meant European. There's no such thing as looking neutrally racialized. Like, every single different ethnicity and ethnocultural group has a different way that they look. And that looks very different in different ways. It doesn't necessarily, you know, some people can be light-skinned and ambiguously racialized, but there are characteristics that are associated with different racial groups, whether or not these racial groups are inherent or constructed. And I think that even when we look at other artists, you know, who are achieving a lot of success, you know, like Beyoncé or like Nicki Minaj or like Rihanna, you know, they're really glorified or kept as light as possible. I don't know, and I'm not even going to speculate on what work anyone has had done, but, you know, we can see in Nicki Minaj's videos that she's very, very overexposed. She's kept very, very, very light. Similarly with Beyoncé, it's also kept very light. Her hair is kept very, very light. And again, I think that there are really important conversations we need to have in our communities about the ways in which we still hierarchize light-skinnedness and the way that shadism still plays out. And we have to really interrogate why light-skinned is seen as so attractive, and it is because it is read as closer to white. Like, we have to have that conversation and really go into that place. I think that even with, when I point to the recent casting of Zoe Saldana in the upcoming unapproved Nina Simone biopic, you know, Hollywood continues to reaffirm that it's okay to play a dark-skinned Black girl on TV, but not be one in real life. And really what prompted this to me was looking at the recent images of Lil' Kim, and, you know, she looks so different. She looks so different from the girl that I grew up looking at. And I think, you know, again, I don't want to hold people, and particularly women. Women are most often criticized unfairly for their appearance and told that they have to look natural. But in that way, they just need, in that way, what is meant is that they need to look effortlessly attractive. And so it can't look as though they tried. So I really want to be careful with doing that and with putting those kinds of expectations on her. But I think that, you know, her appearance is really indicative at this point is that we are all really sensitive creatures and we don't live in a vacuum. And we're affected by each other. We're affected by the movies that we watch. We're affected by the magazines that we read. We can't assume that these things that we continue to just dismiss as being entertainment are not having really profound effects on our psyches and the psyches of other people. And I think that if we continue to keep also internalizing those experiences of racism and, you know, keep on reblogging another picture of like the light-skinned baby with green eyes and keep reaffirming just how beautiful all of these light-skinned women are, I think that we can't say that in one breath and then say black is beautiful in another breath, because our actions and the ways in which we talk about blackness don't match up with what can be a statement that seems to make sense in the moment. And so I think that a big part of it is pushing people to make it in other people's media, and, you know, and pushing for our representation in media that we know is inherently racist. We know that they consciously are omitting us from fashion shows, from magazines, for all of the different reasons that they very clearly communicated, all of the Euro-Western racist kind of media conglomerate. But we still seek to find validation by people who don't consider us to be attractive and only find the lightest, most quote-unquote European ones of us the most attractive. So why do we continue to push to be represented in that media? And why don't we think about how we can shift the focus of folks in our communities to other media? I think if we continue to feed a system that chews us up and spits us out, we are also accountable for creating the conditions that feed this kind of celebrity. And, you know, in the past several years, but I don't think this is really reflective specifically of the past several years, we've seen a lot of surgery that has popped up that has really been about deracializing people's features. And so whether this is East Asian women with hooded eyes getting their eyes made more European, so getting more of a lid, or it is with skin bleaching or with other types of cosmetic surgery, the way that this has happened is something that has obviously been around since colonization. And recently I read this article that was just describing how post-apartheid in South Africa, that black women and women of color were banned from wearing their hair curly, were banned from wearing brightly colored skirts and like close-fitting shirts. And, you know, these were jealous white women who pushed to make it law to try to ban us from looking as beautiful as we effortlessly look, from wearing the colors, from having our natural curly hair. And I think that, you know, you can look, there's so many examples of the ways that Europeanness tries to commodify different aesthetic choices that have been very, very, very black, but and only then do they become attractive. But when we are wearing them, you know, I think this often happens with girls who are wearing fake nails or black girls who have different hair colors. When we do it, it's ghetto. But when Lana Del Rey does it, it's edgy. It's cool. And again, I think that that's something that we have to talk about in the ways that racialized sexism affects us, that we are not even given access to our own cultural creations as being something that we are entitled to have. We are banned from even using them by that hegemonic Euro-Western culture. And so for me, it just feels really, really important to think about how we can unplug from a media that we have seen is killing us, is killing the best and the brightest of us. I think when we look at Michael Jackson, I think that that's such an apt example. And, you know, people can talk about vitiligo all they want, but vitiligo doesn't account for all the nose jobs or the lace front hair that Michael Jackson had. You know, that those are things that are clearly, and he always talked about when he was younger, you know, hating his really, really big nose. And what, how can we as a community think about how, again, to unplug from racist Euro-Western media that continues to reaffirm that we are not valuable, that we are not attractive, and puts us in a hierarchy based on how light or how, again, quote-unquote European, because, again, I know that these features are also features that Black and African folks have, so, or how how closely European we look. And I think that, you know, often when we hear about things like this, the immediate response I've witnessed has really been into blame and shame the person who is doing that, and or to say that they looked better before, they look ugly now. And, you know, I really think that that there is no place for shame in the revolution, that we actually have to create space for people to just honestly reflect who they are. And I think that, you know, for me, I think about racism in the way that I think about a disease. And we have to remember that the reason why racism is terrifying is because it works. We don't blame people for dying of cancer, for not being strong enough to withstand the debilitating effects of the disease. We blame the disease and the terrifying way that it consumes the bodies of people that we love. And I think a similar analogy needs to be played out with racism, that we can't blame the people in our communities for experiencing the painful erosion that racism has on our psyche and our sense of self-worth. We actually need to start thinking about, okay, so we know that this does this to even the ones of us who are the most talented, who are the most accomplished in the context of this society. And if they are suffering with this, then we have to ensure that our young people and our communities are no longer looking to this media that we know is killing us. And I think that as a light-skinned woman, I have to really call out other light-skinned folks for the ways in which we enjoy the privilege of even mediocre amounts of visibility. And we use that to say that it's getting better when we know that it isn't. We know that we're not seeing dark-skinned, fat, Black women represented in mainstream media in ways that aren't monstrous. And Precious was an example of that. You know, that was really the only... we don't get to see fat Black women in movies, you know, just being pharmacists or experiencing love for the first time. They're not the stars of romantic comedies. They are the joke of romantic comedies. And so if we continue to allow media, this Euro-Western media, to portray us in this way, and we're not supporting our community-based media, and we're not turning away from something, then we also have a responsibility to play in the ways that this decimates our community. And so I just want to end by saying that, you know, we really need to be vigilant in decolonizing ourselves and confronting the standards that make some bodies more valuable than others in the context of this specific system, of this specific Euro-Western system, because this is not the only system we can have. We have had many systems before. We can have many systems and many cultures, many creations that we work with now. We do. There are many different cultures and cultural experiences operating simultaneously across the globe. We don't have to invest ourselves into the system. We don't have to do that. And we can make spaces that reflect us as we are. Camel toes, nappy hair, saggy tits, in wheelchairs, trans, queer, short. We can have things that reflect us as we are in ways that are nuanced, complicated, and beautiful. We contribute so meaningfully to each other's safety and sense of self-worth, and we can and do all the time create the conditions necessary to heal each other.
And you're listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is Mally, a.k.a. DocuVixen, and you had been listening to Black Feminism Live with Kim Crosby, and she will be sending in reports every month. Big ups to her.